Welcome to Talking to Grandma, a weekly podcast that elevates stories, science, and strategies to help you raise and teach multilingual and bilingual children. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides, founder and CEO of Bilingual Generation, an organization that helps children with bilingualism in their bones stay connected to their heritage languages and cultures. I'm also a Harvard-educated doctora who has experienced losing, recovering, and passing on my heritage language to my children. Whether you are a parent, grandparent, teacher, researcher, school leader, or simply someone interested in the topics of language learning and language preservation, this podcast is for you. Through interviews with amazing guests and solo episodes, you will find the resources, guidance, and strategies needed to support you in your journey. Let's get started. Today, you'll hear from the passionate duo, Carolyn Krolot and Gina Rodriguez, as they explore the impact of Proposition 227 on bilingual education in California and their work to shift the narrative through the Two Languages, Twice the Opportunities campaign.
You know, we've come a long way since then with many assets-based policies. We have Prop 58 that now allows for bilingual programs in K-12. But, you know, for almost 20 years, as you mentioned, we were not allowed to have bilingual programs. So many teachers who had their bilingual authorization that allowed them to teach in bilingual classrooms moved to English-only classrooms. You know, we didn't have any more bilingual authorization programs in higher ed. So many teachers stopped getting their bilingual authorization because there was no point, there was no way to teach in bilingual programs. So now we can open the classrooms, but we don't have the teachers to teach in them.
Carolyn Krolot is a director of dual language learner programs at Early Edge California. She comes to the organization with over 10 years of experience in early childhood education, having worked primarily supporting dual language students and teachers in the classroom. Carolyn has a passion for early childhood education and for advocating for the rights and needs of dual language learners and their families. She is also the mother to two boys, ages 7 and 1, who she is raising to speak their home languages of Brazilian Portuguese and French. For the majority of her career, Gina has worked on issues of access and equity on behalf of low-income children and youth. Gina is a program officer at First 5 LA, and before joining First 5 LA, she worked with California Gear Up, a federally funded college readiness program. A Tijuanense at heart, she grew up in the San Fernando Valley and attended California State University at Northridge, where she obtained a BA in political science. She also completed a fellowship in public affairs with Coro Southern California in Los Angeles. She has a master's degree in urban planning from the University of California, Los Angeles. Listen as we dispel common myths and share tools and strategies to communicate the many, many benefits of bilingual education. Welcome to the show, Carolyn and Gina. You are both doing such important work for children and bilingualism, and I want to get to that. But first, I'd love to hear a bit about y'all. What brought y'all to this work? Can you share more about your own relationship with your heritage language and how that impacts how you show up today? We can go with Carolyn first.
Sure. First off, thank you so much for having me and Gina. We're so excited to be here and share more about our backgrounds and stories and then about our work as well. So for my background and, you know, experience with my heritage languages, my mother is Brazilian and my father is French, and I was born here in Los Angeles. However, neither of my parents spoke English at home, and so I was raised speaking Portuguese and French, and when I got to school is when I learned English. And so I didn't see it as a benefit at that time. I was embarrassed. Whenever my parents were speaking in our languages, I would be embarrassed. I wanted to be like everyone else, and I would say, no, I want to speak English. My mom really struggled because I only wanted to respond in English, but she was very persistent, and I'm so grateful to her today. She would always, you know, that's not my language. You speak to me in Portuguese. And, you know, I'm so grateful that I was able to continue speaking with my relatives when we would visit our family or they would visit us. I was able to communicate with my grandma, my cousins. None of them speak English. And so, you know, I've always been interested in languages and cultures. And that's how my background started, you know, in terms of language learning, education. And so I've spent, you know, the last 20 years in education and specifically early childhood education, supporting language. It used to be English learners. Now we're looking at our assets that we bring, dual language learners, have worked in many positions around teacher training, curriculum development, coaching in the classroom as a site supervisor in a bilingual program, actually in Brazil. I was living there for 5 years and then worked, you know, in teacher training and site supervision in a bilingual program serving children ages 1 all the way through 5th grade. And then more recently moved into the work of policy, which is what I'm doing now for Early Edge California as their director of dual language learner programs and policy.
Oh, that's amazing. And such a powerful story. I feel like it can go either way, right? Like when you have that heritage language in your family and your parents speak it and your grandparents speak it, it's not always the case that it's retained, even though it's spoken in the home. So what a wonderful gift, like you said. What about you, Gina? What is your relationship like with your heritage language and how does that impact your work today?
Yeah, again, gratitude for being here today, having this conversation. I love your title, Talking to Grandma, because I was very much brought up by my grandmas and my great grandmas. My parents immigrated to the U.S. when I was about 4 to the San Fernando Valley here in Los Angeles County. And I was born in Tijuana, Mexico. And my father is from Michoacán, my mother from Jalisco. And we were like the first Latino or Mexican family on the block. So there was a lot of dynamics around that. We grew up pretty much speaking Spanish in the home and having magazines in Spanish, and my abuelitas looking or watching soap operas in Espanol, las novelas. It's very much about, in terms of how I show up, I consider myself bilingual, bicultural. When I would show up to school, it was all English. It was predominantly white. And I felt like I was living like a double life because the culture at home was so different from the culture at school. So there was a lot of like conflict also growing up in terms of values that I was hearing and learning at school from my friends and their families. And then there's also our values. So there was like tension as a result, I remember pretty much wrestling with that and what that meant for me. And of course, as I grew up and became a teenager and went to high school and then, of course, college, I began to process all that happened, me growing up in this predominantly white community and also, again, being like the only Mexican family or family of color on the block. So looking back, it was definitely an interesting journey for me in terms of really holding on to my culture, my identity, never letting go of that connection that I had with like Mexico or Tijuana where I was born. And really just every time we would go back, it was just I felt like I was home. Coming back, it was not home. Now that's a little different, of course.
Yeah, wow. And it's so amazing that you were able to see the value and asset in that, because sometimes when we have such a dissonance between our home and our school life, we can internalize that, oh, to be successful or to get ahead in academics, that this way of being is better. And it sounds like you were able to really value your home life as much as what was happening in the school environment. I know that you're also a mother and you've raised a bilingual, bicultural child. Can you tell me a little bit about that journey for you and what you hope to happen and what happened and what your lessons are from that?
Sure. Knowing and understanding how babies can like distinguish like so many sounds and language so early in life and definitely pick up on multiple languages, I knew this having my child, his name is Gio, Giovanni, So we talked as much as we could in Spanish with him, and I encouraged our family to speak Spanish to him only, because we figured once he went out into school and hung out with his friends, he would pick up English. So all throughout, you know, since birth to about 5 years old, Spanish was very much reinforced. Even his family child care provider, she was from Michoacán. I was very intentional in making sure that he went to her, to her FCC, what we call family child care, because of that, of the cultural connection as well. Once he got into kindergarten, though, suddenly he came home just speaking English. Mm-hmm. And I was no longer mama, I was mom. Mm-hmm. My husband was no longer papa, I was dad. And there was a reluctance to speak Spanish. And I kept telling my family, grandmas, please make sure you continue to speak Spanish to him. Throughout his education, we kept reinforcing that. And of course, you know, visiting Baja California, visiting Mexico, understanding and telling the stories of me growing up and the stories of his ancestors, we reinforced his culture. And of course, that value, we talked about the value of making sure that he maintained his Spanish skills. So it wasn't until college that he kind of like got it, and he became a major. His major is Spanish, along with political science and history, which was fascinating to me. I understood the Spanish one, but not the other aspects. But I'm so proud that he was able to retain that, because again, we just want to make sure that he keeps that cultural connection and he knows where he comes from.
Yeah, wow, that's so important, and I think really encouraging for a lot of our listeners too, because like anything with parenting, you can control the input, you can control the environment, but your children are still children that are individuals and they have their own autonomy and decision making. And so I feel like you did one of the most important things, which is to communicate the value of maintaining a connection to your heritage language, because maybe it's not sticking in middle school and maybe it's not sticking in high school, but right, if that value is there, the children are going to have a motivation to come back, return to the language. And also all the exposure that you were consistent with surely helped him when he decided to study Spanish. I'm sure he had a lot of bilingualism in him already in terms of that, those early years, that foundation, understanding, comprehension, accent, all of those things. So that's just such a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that, Gina.
Yeah, and I would encourage parents to not give up. Because at certain points I felt discouraged, and but as you said, something stayed with him, right? We just kept at it, and we continued to speak Spanish, and we continued to challenge him about learning at a deeper level Spanish, like in terms of like, you know, reading it, writing it, being able to be fluent so that he could function in multiple cultures.
Yeah, exactly. And Carolyn, you're on a similar journey, but a different timeline. Mm-hmm. So you have younger children now, and 7 and 1 years old, and they are growing up trilingually. So can you tell us a little bit about how you're doing that and what that experience has been like for you?
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, my two boys, the oldest, as you mentioned, he just turned 7. And so since he was actually born in Brazil, and then we moved to Los Angeles when he was about 6 months, and my husband is Brazilian. So, you know, we have the language models here at home, and we really emphasized, you know, the importance, and we just continue to speak only in Portuguese and French. And we're also fortunate to have my father as our neighbor, and he's fluent in, you know, native French speaker. And so I told him to speak only French with Alan. And so since birth and until today, he's been doing that, and it's been working. You know, we also have many books at home in our different home languages. We read to him every single day in our home language. We really emphasize, just like Gina, we know that English, it's going to come. It's in the environment, in the community, once they get to school. Now he's in first grade, and I was fortunate to find a public bilingual French-English immersion school through Los Angeles Unified School District. And he's doing great reading and writing in both English and French. And, you know, often I hear from families say, oh, well, I'll just teach them the home language at home. And, you know, there's only so much we can do at home. But when we have a bilingual program, they're able to learn the reading, the writing, the academic language that's really difficult to teach at home. So really encouraging families to, when possible, put their child in a bilingual program. And then especially, you know, we have all of these possibilities for them, all of the benefits of bilingualism. And then now we have California was the first state in the nation to move forward with this state seal of biliteracy, which is a seal on your high school diploma that shows that you're biliterate in English and another language. And, you know, that opens so many doors with job opportunities, et cetera. So definitely encouraging, and the earlier, the better. And so that brings me to our baby, Nicholas. So he just turned 15 months today. And also since birth, we're just, you know, speaking in Portuguese, reading. He loves books. He's super excited about books and is saying many words already in Portuguese and French. He has also his little French lesson with my dad, you know, reading his little books with songs. But I will say it does get harder as they get older, as Gina mentioned. So my older son, he's wanting to respond in English. So that's why I'm also fortunate that we have him in the French program. We're continuing to speak at home. We really bring in the culture as much as possible. You know, so fortunate for technology. We didn't have that, you know, with my grandma. It was long distance calls and very expensive to talk to her. But now, you know, free over the internet, calling grandma every day, our cousins. And then, you know, they don't speak English. So having to speak our home language with them. And so, yeah, every day, you know, not giving up, as Gina mentioned, really, you know, seeing the value. But now we just have so much more information about, you know, with research about the benefits of bilingualism, the importance of the home language. You know, often we hear, oh, no, they need to be successful in school. We need to teach them English. But now from research, we know that you need to actually, to learn English, you need to have a strong foundation in your home language. So it's actually, we need to teach them the home language, make sure they maintain the home language so that they can learn English and be successful in both languages.
Exactly, exactly. And those language skills transfer. So, you know, setting that strong foundation is definitely going to set them up for English while maintaining their heritage language. So Early Edge California and First Five LA both work in California communities, strengthening systems to support child development in their early ages. We've talked to other guests from California on this podcast about Proposition 227 that eliminated bilingual education for almost two decades. Mm-hmm. What kind of effect has that had on California, on the communities that you work with, on the state of child development across California and even locally in LA?
Well, I can start. I mean, it has had a profound impact, and I would say a very negative impact on our state. You know, we've come a long way since then with many assets-based policies. We have Prop 58 that now allows for bilingual programs in K-12. But, you know, for almost 20 years, as you mentioned, we were not allowed to have bilingual programs. So many teachers who had their bilingual authorization that allowed them to teach in bilingual classrooms moved to English-only classrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have any more bilingual authorization programs in higher ed. So many teachers stopped getting their bilingual authorization because there was no point. There was no way to teach in bilingual programs. So now we can open the classrooms, but we don't have the teachers to teach in them. So we have already a teacher shortage, but then a really dire teacher shortage when it comes to bilingual teachers. And so that's one main piece. And then, you know, just in general, communication to families, you know, for almost 20 years, they're hearing English only, English only. So now to revert that and, you know, share about the importance of the home language, the importance of bilingualism, the benefits of bilingual programs, it's really a struggle.
Yeah, this is all started in the early 1990s, where California passed a series of propositions that were anti-Latino, frankly. Started with Prop 187. I don't know if you're familiar with Prop 187, which targeted undocumented individuals, and they could not access public services, including schools. And then came Proposition 209, which did away with affirmative action. And that's when we saw the admissions of underrepresented students plummet at the UC system level, specifically UC Berkeley and UCLA. Then came the Prop 227, which prohibited bilingual education. That was devastating. My husband at the time was a teacher. And he was devastated, having been trained as a bilingual teacher. And we were just seeing these waves of propositions from one day to the next. He had to instruct in English. So there was definitely a transition there for him and the children he was teaching, and away. And he struggled, and the school struggled in terms of how to message this to parents. And as Carolyn mentioned, then came Prop 58, which overturned 227. So the plunging, it swung to the other way in about 20 years. And we are so fortunate. And what I could say, the people that voted for Proposition 58 probably were people that, well, I'm sure, lived through the early 90s and saw the racist overtones of those propositions. And just saw that it's a benefit. It's bilingualism is such an asset, and children's culture and identity needs to be honored. And as Carolyn said, and we need to treat families and children bringing those assets to the table, not looking at them as deficits. So we are so encouraged now, and we've been getting funding to be able to message the strengths and the positivism around being bilingual and multilingual. So we're at the point where we want to reach out and make sure that families and parents and communities and businesses and all of California and even the nation recognize the importance of multilingualism.
Yeah, that's so important. And I think, you know, that messaging during the time of English-only legislation, definitely in California, but also across the U.S., really impacted our communities. And, you know, parents just want the best for their children. So if they're being told the best way to learn English is to be taught in English, right, that's mm-hmm. something that's going to stick with them. And so I'm curious to know a little bit about this campaign that y'all are talking about. It's called Two Languages, Twice the Opportunities, and it's something that y'all are collaborating on in order to begin to shift the narrative. So can you share a bit more about the purpose of this campaign and why narrative work is so important as a partner to policy change work?
Right. Two Languages, Twice the Opportunities, Encouraging Multilingualism for LA County Kids. That's what we're trying to definitely nurture. And we want to definitely reinforce that messaging. And we joined forces, our organizations, First 5 LA, Early Edge, Quality Start Los Angeles, which is a consortium of other organizations, Unite LA, to be able to align our messaging so that we are able to share this common message across our communities. It's interesting that communications campaigns or communications is one, like a top policy recommendation. Because mm-hmm. there hasn't been like this consistent message about how positive it is to be multilingual and bicultural and bilingual. So, and it is a key, I think, strategy to be able to change mindsets and therefore policy and systems. So we started small. We have now grown. We received a surge of funding to be able to blanket the county with all sorts of messaging in multiple languages, not just Spanish and Chinese, Khmer, Korean, Armenian, Vietnamese, and we should be seeing some of that hopefully starting in April. We saw a smaller version of that last spring, but now, as we said, we've received some additional funding to make the campaign broader. And amplify, and also, again, see it everywhere on buses, on trains, in bus benches, community stores, and of course, radio spots, and also in ethnic media as well.
And I can just add more about your question, Veronica, about why is it important for policy? Because now actually in California, we have the policies, as we mentioned, with Prop 58 encouraging bilingual programs. But what's missing is the communications piece, because we're finding that families are not seeking out those programs mm-hmm. because they still have that mindset of the 20 years of English-only policy. And so it's really about, you know, re-educating, sharing the new research, sharing the information that's available, and helping them understand and start seeking out these programs, because, you know, we want to make sure that those who are benefiting from the programs are the ones who need it most and who, you know, have the home language to bring. And we really want to be building on those assets. So that's why the communication piece is critical. And while the focus of the funding is in Los Angeles County, this campaign is, you know, definitely can be used anywhere. And we're looking to see how we can expand it to the state level. And then even nationally, definitely taking the message two languages, twice the opportunities. We found that really resonated with families. As you mentioned, Veronica, families just want what's best for their kids. So if they know that this is going to open up more opportunities for them, then that's what they want for their children. And we're also seeing it at the national level with, you know, the U.S. Department of Education, the new campaign, being bilingual is my superpower. And so there's definitely alignment here between the state and everything we can do beyond as a nation to really benefit from bilingualism and really get on board with, frankly, the rest of the world.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love the messaging. And also, like you mentioned, the alignment with the Department of Education being bilingual is my superpower. Because when I was a student, the Department of Education was very much about No Child Left Behind. And that translated to a push to testing, which was a push to, you know, English only. And there was no messaging at all about bilingualism or the cultural linguistic assets that you bring. So I think that is such an important, significant shift. I'm curious to know about any type of messaging or messages that you would share with educators. So we have a lot of families that listen, but we also have a lot of educators that listen to this podcast as well, ranging from classroom teachers to instructional leads to chief academic officers. And they're really on the front lines of communicating with families. I was at a literacy conference last weekend, and during the Q&A, one of the teachers asked me, she was a dual language teacher, English, Spanish classroom. And she said, you know, some of our families, I continue to try to communicate to them the importance of dual language education, but they either don't want to enroll their child in dual language or bilingual education, or they don't want to promote their heritage language at home because they want them to learn English as quickly as possible. And they think dual language is in opposition to that. And I share the research and I share all the information and let them know that it facilitates language learning in a more meaningful way. And it's, you know, so much better for their kids, but it's not moving the needle. And so I had some thoughts and perspectives on, you know, how this teacher could approach the conversations with her families. But I wanted to open that up to y'all, if you've heard that sentiment from teachers as well, and if you have any recommendations for how they can be advocates for the messages around two languages, twice opportunities.
Sure, I can start. I mean, definitely, I think sharing the research, that's the first piece, you know, equipping teachers with the data, the research, the tools and strategies, because there are so many simple things that families can do at home. So it's about sharing the research, sharing strategies and tools, and then also the data. You know, when we see in schools that children in bilingual programs are outperforming children in English-only programs, that speaks volumes. And so sharing that kind of data with families also is important. And it's also word of mouth, you know, when families see their friends enrolled and sharing positive experiences that they've had with their own children, that can be beneficial too.
Absolutely. I think it goes back to like an aligned, strategic communications or messaging out there around bilingualism and multilingualism. And as Carolyn said, it starts with the research. And I think that educators, people that are on the front line, need to make space to have these conversations in the classroom and with school and with their families at the school level to be able to talk about what it means to be multilingual in Los Angeles or in their community, and the importance of maintaining that, and also sharing some of the research, and again, honoring the cultural strengths of the families and the children and what they bring to the table, and also shifting that mindset even at the community level, at the school level, so that all cultures are respected and honored, and all languages are respected and honored and supported. So whenever I have some sort of like conversation with a family or even with my own family, I always talk about like the 6 reasons why to raise a bilingual child, which is, you know, easier to learn another language from birth than any other time. Bilingualism helps children develop superior reading and writing skills. Bilingual children overall have better analytical, social, and academic skills than their monolingual counterparts. Bilingual children tend to have higher self-esteem, confidence. Learning more than one language or knowing more than one language, children feel at ease in different environments. Bilingual children tend to have more career prospects and higher average salaries than monolingual adults. And that always catches people's ear. You know, that bilingual children or multilingual children tend to have higher prospects in terms of earning power and career choices. And of course, this other one is this powerful one. A bilingual brain is quicker and nimbler, right? As adults, bilinguals tend to be more resistant to Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. So those are the ones that always catch people's ears in terms like, oh, really? Okay. It's like, okay, it may affect me, you know, right? Because we're seeing so many people suffer from dementia, and keeping your bilingualism is so critical. It's like a key strategy. And also the economic argument in terms of bilingual kids, multilingual individuals make more money and have more prospects in terms of career choices.
Yeah, for sure. It is literally a superpower. All the things that you mentioned, it's just amazing. And I'm hoping that, you know, we're continuing to make the shift to where it's just the norm in the right. U.S. You know, it's such the norm to be a monolingual society, and all of the kind of efforts that seem like a challenge to us now when we're raising bilingual children, hopefully in 10, 15 years from now, it is just the norm that we're all raising bilingual children, because that is how it is in some other countries right. where bilingualism is the norm. So yes, it's so important. I would also add to that, that there is a power in facilitating conversation amongst parents as well, in gathering parents to have these conversations about bilingualism. Because we've gathered parents for cohort-based learning and workshops, and it's so powerful. Like, it's kind of like a classroom where you're like, you know, you could be the teacher saying something, but then when the classmate says it to another classmate, it carries mm-hmm. so much more weight. And so if another parent is saying, you know, I hear you, but this or this has been my experience, X, Y, and Z, I think that's another incredible tool that teachers can use, that school leaders can use when you have kind of orientation or any other type of opportunity to gather parents. Get them in small groups, get them talking Absolutely. About their heritage languages, get them talking about the challenges, right? Because we have all the research and we can know it intellectually, but I think also some of these parents have tried to do it and it may be a challenge for them, and they may not know the ways to continue to persist, or, you know, the strategies like you mentioned, Carolyn. So yeah, I think that that is so important to share the research, the strategies, and to connect them to other families, to do it in community, because that's right. that's the best way that we can support our children's bilingualism in community.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Completely agree. Start small, start at the community level, small groups at the school site.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you so much for sharing that. I'm curious to know, as we, you know, talk about beginning to shift the narrative and supporting two languages twice the opportunities as kind of a mindset shift, for each of you, what's kind of your most annoying or biggest bilingualism myth that you wish people would release? So what's the thing that you hear the most and you're like, this is a myth, I wish they would release this?
Right. For me, is that it's going to confuse the child to learn multiple languages early on. And then you mentioned, I think, Carolyn, or you mentioned, and I don't want to use up all the myths, by the way, but that since you're, if you're an immigrant family, you know, and you're in the U.S. now, then you need to learn English. And that's the priority, because that's the main language, that's the dominant language that you're going to need as you go out into the world.
Exactly. Yeah. And if we can dig into that myth a little bit more of like, if you're speaking to a child in two languages, that it's going to confuse them, or bilingualism is going to confuse them. That's not true. Children have different language systems, right? And you may not be able to see it because a child may be using two words from two different languages, but the sentence structures, the way that they employ those different linguistic repertoires, if you take a closer look, you can see that there is a structure, there is an order to it, and that those things that you might see at 1 year or 2 years, developmentally, they're going to start to fall into place even more. And so that's a big one. I'm glad you brought that up, Gina. From the parents that we've worked with, we sometimes hear parents say that they hear this from pediatricians as well. So it is shocking to me the number of times that I've heard this from parents about hearing this from a medical professional, which is so dated, which is not grounded in research, and is a complete myth. So thanks for bringing that one up. Carolyn, do you have a myth that you would wish people would release?
Definitely those are at the top of the list. And just to build off of what you shared, Vito, when we were putting together this campaign and another website that's geared towards teachers, it's called Multilingual Learning Toolkit. It's a hub of resources for supporting multilingual learners preschool through third grade. One of the national experts on dual language learning, Dr. Linda Espinosa, approached us about including a section for pediatricians, because this is so common. We need to equip these medical professionals with the latest research, because they're going there monthly for visits, with families. How can we share that? No, it's actually going to help your child. You should be speaking the home language. And then I would say, the same thing in terms of myths, but what research shows is that all children have the capacity and capability of learning multiple languages, even those with disabilities. And so really we're hearing, families are hearing, no, speak only English. And that's such a detriment to children. And so how can we equip all medical professionals, all learning specialists, to really support families with what's best for children, which is speaking their home language and learning English, but not at the expense of the home language? Because what we often see is when children move into school settings, then they lose their home language. So it's really sharing with families the importance of maintaining the home language, because they won't be able to reap the benefits of bilingualism if they don't maintain the home language.
Yes. Right. You're leaving me speechless. I want to do the, I'm doing the emoji right now with the hands in the air.
Yes.
Double high five. Yes. Yes to all of that. Thank you. I'm so excited that you all are spreading this message, beginning to shift the narrative. I think it's going to have such a profound effect locally on where you're working and nationally as well. There's so much healing that our community has to do from years of linguistic oppression, and this work truly brings me a lot of hope. So I'm really grateful that you all are doing it, that you've taken the time to come on the podcast and share the message with us and with our community. And I'm curious to know if there's any other aspect of two languages, twice the opportunities, that you'd like to share with us and our audience today.
Maybe we can just share the links with y'all, as you say.
Right. And,
get the brochures that we have everything electronically. We have a social media toolkit to really share the message and connect families and teachers to the website that Gina mentioned, Quality Start Los Angeles, which has a wealth of resources for supporting bilingualism, resources for families.
Yeah, I would say yes, for sure. Thank you, Carolyn. And also, I think it's going to be this going to be ongoing messaging. It's not just a one-shot deal, right? I think that's why I appreciate your podcast. It seems like you're committed to this. So I think it's going to be an ongoing messaging and aligning of this wonderful, you know, message of bilingualism and multilingualism. And it's also to rectify years and years of the effects of Proposition 227. So it's an ongoing process, an ongoing learning, ongoing journey. And I appreciate programs like yourself that keep this this subject alive. It's an important service to the community.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We will share those links in our show notes so folks can have access to that as well. Before we hop off, I'd love to hear from each of you of what is bringing you joy these days. And we can start with Carolyn.
Well, definitely what we started the show with, which is my two sons, just being able to spend time with them and, you know, my work, you know, doing what I do of supporting bilingualism for children at the policy level, just making a positive change for children, allowing them to develop their bilingualism. And just sharing this information with more families.
Thank you so much. And Gina?
Same. My son brings me joy, and that he's, that the Spanish just rolls off his tongue. And my advocacy work for children, especially multilingual children. So a lot of gratitude for that and being able to work in this field of advocacy for children.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing your joy with us and sharing your lessons and your perspectives and your expertise. We are in deep gratitude to both of y'all. And we thank you once again for this wonderful conversation.
Thank you for the invitation this afternoon or this morning, Vero.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@bilingualgeneration.com. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram @talkingtograndma. If you are interested in learning more about our workshops and curricular tools for schools serving multilingual and emerging multilingual students, visit our website at www.bilingualgeneration.com or write us at hello@bilingualgeneration.com. Talking to Grandma is owned by Bilingual Generation. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.